Greetings, peace, love, prosperity. Welcome back to another episode of Talking Black with Aleem, your host. And this is the day after a series that I did yesterday, making my claim, you know, on the proper way that we should deal with people with mental health issues and celebrities. And the celebrity that I chose to make an example of is Kanye West, a brother who is, you know, in the media, a brother who is, you know, using every outlet he can think of to get attention. And he's really crying for help. And my criticism is not towards him. My criticism is to the black community that he comes from. And my criticisms are, how can we be so cold? And how can we be so uncaring and unforgiving when we see one of our own acting out of character? This is the very thing that perpetuates mental disorder in the black community, because black people would rather ridicule, mock, and besmirch people with mental illness than to actually help them. I know this firsthand. I have many people very close to me that suffer from mental illness who have been diagnosed. Apart from being diagnosed, I believe that everybody has some degree of mental instability. You can't live in a world this wicked and this corrupt without having some sort of problem in your mental faculties, some sort of, you know, obstruction in your thinking. So my frustration and, you know, basically my whole argument is, how dare we take a position of judge over, you know, Kanye West, and not just Kanye West, but all people who suffer. I had an interview, or rather a conversation, with a sister yesterday. I won't reveal her name. The conversation was very revealing. It was made to podcast form, but I ended up not publishing because it started off good and then it got really messy towards the end. The sister lost a lot of her composure. And it became Kanye West is a puppet for the government, and Kanye West got his own mother killed. And at that point, I had to really stop the interview because I can't argue with that. I can't argue against irrationality. When people are talking like that, and people do talk like that, I have to let you go, because you're not seeing, you're being the Kanye West in this situation right now. The sister said Kanye, he put a hit out on his own mother. The sister started the conversation by saying, I know the damage that being in interracial relationships does to a black human being, because I was married to a white man for 1 year. And the sister went on further to say that I had a terrible experience with this white man while I was his wife. He didn't connect with me spiritually, emotionally. He did not respect my views of my own race. When I would try to talk about myself as a proud black woman, or when I would try to express pride in my blackness, he would say, even in my positive thinking of my black self, that I was being racist. This is straight from her. Of course, this is no surprise to me because I know that white people are this way. White people do not extol blackness. White people extol niggerdom. White people love and prefer black people to be niggers as opposed to being black because niggers are safer than black people. The sister went on to say there was a situation where she was accosted by the police, and her white husband was almost lending a hand in her arrest with the police. Her white husband was very friendly and very very passive in her arrest. And she got arrested and he later bailed her out. But she said all these things happened and it eventually made me, you know, reconsider my marriage with the white man. Because I should have listened to my parents, she said. My parents were pro-black. My parents always warned me not to mix my blood and mix and share my bed with people of the opposite race. And I should have listened to them. And I told the sister, I said, as much as I don't like the fact that you were in an interracial relationship with the man who is a part of the race that is your enemy, I do have value in your experience. Your experience has value because you could be teaching a lot of people the cons of this relationship. The sister went on to say some very gnarly things. Much of what I agree with, much that I didn't. She went to say white people have no souls. She said that white people are basically not that far from animals. And I definitely understand where she's coming from. I definitely understand, and I agree with most of those sentiments. White people are very animalistic type of people. This is true. And, you know, that's okay. But what I was trying to show the system, where she was having a very hard time understanding, was the contradiction that she was presenting. She was saying, you know, Kanye West is this and that, and I don't like him. And I was trying to tell her, but sister, you know, no matter what Kanye West does or who he is, he's not alone in betraying his race. All black people betray their race. Some of us do it on a daily basis. Like I said in the podcast before, to anybody who wanted to see Hillary Clinton as a president instead of Donald Trump, they are also a type of black person that will betray their race, because Hillary Clinton is no better than Donald Trump. Hillary Clinton has shown that she is just as racist, if not more racist, than Donald Trump throughout her whole entire political career, not to mention her husband, Bill Clinton, who introduced the three-strike rule to lock up our brothers and our cousins and fathers and put them away and throw them in jail for the rest of their natural-born lives back in the 90s. That was her husband. So I know that your anger towards Kanye West is irrational, and it's not introspective whatsoever. It's a trending thing. Your anger and your frustration with Kanye West, when you see white people and black people conversing and the subject matter is Donald Trump and Kanye West, I know that this is not something that is truly going to unite these two polarized races. I know it's not. This is just a trend. This is a good conversational piece. It's something that's happening and you enjoy talking about it, but you truly don't understand what you're talking about. I know this. Some of you really think that hating Donald Trump, let me get this straight. You think that hating Donald Trump alongside of the rest of the world makes you more American, more black, I mean, more acceptable to white people? It doesn't. White people dislike you still all the same as they did before. It's just that now you all have something in common that you equally hate. But having things in common with white people is not enough to build a strong relationship that will destroy white supremacy and establish black people a separate territory for their own selves. Having commonality will not do that. Just because you watch Game of Thrones and I watch Game of Thrones and we can talk about it at work doesn't mean that we should sleep together. I'm sorry. But most of you all believe that. Most of you all try to use these type of cheap, relatable topics as a way to say, oh, I'm in love. So I say to you, and I say to all black people, you have no reason to dislike Kanye West, none whatsoever. You can just sleep good at night. Just sleep good at night. You don't have to put any stress into Kanye West. Kanye West is a beautiful brother. You all are beautiful black brothers and sisters yourself. You all are going to make mistakes. And when you make a mistake, you're going to want somebody to understand the fact that you are a human being and that you are entitled to make mistakes and you are entitled to learn from your mistakes. You are entitled to that. Nobody can't take that away from you. So Kanye West is a litmus test to how tolerant we are of black people when we are not our best. That's what Kanye West is. Kanye West is a test to you and me. How tolerant are you? How sympathetic are you? How loving are you? What are the conditions to your love? How far are you willing to go in your love of your people? You gonna disown Kanye West? Here you have Snoop Dogg, Snoop Doggy Dogg, and T.I., black men who, in their prime, ravaged their communities. Snoop Dogg has been calling black women bitches for the past 30 years. That's a betrayal of his race. When you call a black woman a bitch, you are betraying your race. You are betraying the legitimate aspirations, and you're betraying the goals and of harmony towards your, for your people, towards freedom for your people. You're betraying that. You're betraying the hard work of all the ancestors. You're betraying the memory of your ancestors. You betray that. But here they are. Snoop Doggy Dogg having a show with Martha Stewart. Imagine that. Imagine Snoop Doggy Dogg using his gangster persona to make publication, to make a TV show where his gangster persona is put in contrast to Martha Stewart's sweet white persona. Trying to accentuate the fact that he's black from a different type of lifestyle that is really, you know, negative, and she's white from a better lifestyle, and they put this mixture on TV to show the contrast between black and white, but not really black and white, between nigga and the white race that produced the nigga. See, this is what Snoop Doggy Dogg is involved in. Snoop Doggy Dogg, Snoop Lion, is a beautiful brother as well. I'm not judging him. I'm only bringing up these facts because he is bringing facts up about Kanye West. So you want to go facts, we got to go fact for fact. And the facts are, Snoop Dogg, T.I., you brothers are not the best role models for your own community. You're not truly black in your representation. Not truthfully, no. Truthfully, you are more nigga than black any day of the week. And the only time you're really black is when you're in attendance of Minister Louis Farrakhan's conferences. That's the only time you're really black. Okay, let's not get it twisted. Yeah, I see you, T.I. I see you in the audience at Minister Farrakhan's. Yeah, I see you. I see you, Snoop, in the audience. I see you. I be seeing y'all. That's really when y'all are y'all blackest. That's when all of us are our blackest, when we listen to Minister Farrakhan. When we're talking about the productivity of black people, that's when we are blackest. Not when we're talking about the things that the brothers usually talk about in their rap songs. So come on now, you can't do that to Kanye West. You can't do that. And the conversation I had with the sister yesterday just further it's just further demonstrated just how ridiculous we can be. And I'm sorry, sister, if you're listening to this. I appreciated a lot about our conversation, but there were some parts of our conversation that were way off mark, way off key. But it's revealing. It should just be a mirror. It should just be a mirror. Just go back and listen to it and just see it as a mirror. We're supposed to be a more sympathetic people. My sister talking about Kanye killed his own mother. See, this is the nigga thought process that is destroying black people. That's the thought process that keeps black people down. Because black people are willing to go to extreme lengths to destroy another black person. So extreme that we will even make comments that are said, like we killed our own mother as the sister said it, as a sacrifice to the Illuminati. My goodness. Black people, you gotta stop talking about the Illuminati as well. I'm sorry. The Illuminati is real, but they don't have a damn see-through wall. They don't have somebody on the inside who is a mole feeding you information every time something new is discussed in the Illuminati. There's a person in it who is feeding and leaking information from whatever they discuss. That doesn't exist. Your information on the Illuminati is half true, half speculate. No, I would say not even half. I would say a quarter of it is true. I would say the fact that you know the name Illuminati is true. That might be its real name. It might not be its name anymore. Then I would say that everything else you don't know anything about. Okay? Stop it. Just stop it. That's all I wanted to say. This will be the final video on Kanye West. The final video. And then I'll continue to watch like you, whatever, you know, antics and hijinks he does in the media. That's all right. That's not the problem. Kanye West is not the big picture. He's just a part of the picture. Oh, tomato paste. That's what I need. I'm in here shopping. But I'm gonna let everybody go. Peace, blessings. Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another episode of Talking Black with your brother Aleem. This is the second attempt that I've made at recording this episode. And damn, I don't want to do it, but damn, I want to do it. I feel like I'm obliged to do it.
This is a continuation of the episode that I just published a few hours ago, a podcast where I'm basically defending Brother Kanye West. Notice I call him Brother Kanye West, not just Kanye West, not Yeezus. You know, I'm not going to put Kanye West on a pedestal above myself. I'm going to call him my brother so that I can be humble in my approach to thinking about Kanye West. As I do that, I encourage you to do that as well. We should all have a very humble approach when we are thinking about celebrities, because in truth, they are nothing more than mere human beings. Okay, they are people who are trying to excel in a particular craft, and all they want is love, and all they want to be is recognized for their contribution to humanity. That's it. They are not greater than us. They may be greater than us in a particular field, but as a whole human entity, they are no more greater than you or me. And this is the reason why I take offense to people who slander the name of Kanye West when Kanye West has done so much for us, as not just for music, but for the very imagination of the black youth. Kanye has empowered black young men, including myself, because when he was coming out with Late Registration and Graduation, and I was in high school and I was seeing, you know, teddy bears on album covers, I was beginning to see a place for my own creativity in a real world setting via Kanye West's creativity, via his ingenuity, his ability to curate artwork and to bring to life concepts that we had previously never seen. Kanye West almost single-handedly revolutionized hip hop. There was an era where hip hop was very stagnant. It's the bling bling era of hip hop. You remember it, right? It was the Atlanta hip hop era. It was the lean with it, rock with it era of hip hop. It was the wait till you see my Yin Yang Twins era of hip hop. And Kanye West came right in the midst of that, and he changed hip hop. He absolutely changed the rhythm. He changed the mindset, the subject matter. He made consciousness acceptable in a mainstream field. Kanye West did that. Kanye West gave us Shutter Shades. None of y'all gave us Shutter Shades. Kanye West gave us polos and backpacks. You didn't do that. He did that. Kanye West gave us Jesus Walks. He gave us a song that we could listen to with our mothers. I don't know another rapper that did that until Kendrick Lamar or maybe J. Cole came along, who are sons, spiritual, musical sons of Kanye West. Yeah. Yeah. It's true. All most modern rappers, Chance the Rapper, Lupe Fiasco, Kendrick Lamar, J. Cole, you name it, Logic, even though I do not listen to his music, Logic. All these brothers, they are children of Kanye West. They will tell you that. Drake is really the one who will profess that more than anyone else. He will tell you, Kanye West was an inspiration to me musically speaking, and creatively speaking. Kanye West is a wonder to the entire world. So, with that being said, how does it look for us in a moment of confusion and misdirection? How would it look for us as Kanye West's own people to be the very people who are trying to use his situation as a way to come up or to feel better about our own selves? We're going to come up off another man's downfall? Come on now. Is that right? Is that the right thing to do? Well, Kanye West, he's endorsing Trump. See, and see, this is something that I begin noticing in our community. Dave Chappelle said it perfectly. I don't know his inspiration behind saying what he said, because Dave Chappelle to me is a black man who is very liberal. He's very into white people and white society and stuff like that. Even though on the flip side of Dave Chappelle, he's also a very conscious black, heavy-handedly black brother. So, but Dave Chappelle said, hating Donald Trump made me feel American. He said something to that effect. He basically said that in everybody's combined hatred of Donald Trump, white people, black people, Mexican people, French people, Canadian people, in everybody's combined hatred of Donald Trump, we are beginning to feel American. I do not believe that that is a good enough, a justifiable cause for unity. I do not believe that hating someone brings about true unity. I believe that's a fake illusion of unity. I do not believe that hating Donald Trump is going to solve black people's problems with white people as a whole. And that's what Donald Trump is. Donald Trump is a manifestation of all of white America. You see, and we get it twisted. We think that white people hate Donald Trumps for the same reason. I said Donald Trumps. We think that white people hate Donald Trump for the same reason that we hate Donald Trump. That's a lie. Or it's not a lie, because up until this point, you may have not even thought about it, but it's just not true. That's not a reality. White people do not hate Donald Trump for the same reasons that we as black people claim we hate Donald Trump. And we don't really hate him. It's not that we hate him. It's just that he's something fun to hate on. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, he's fun to hate. He's the one that you love to hate. It's not that you truly hate him. No. You don't truly hate him. You just love to hate him. It feels good to hate Donald Trump. But white people don't dislike Donald Trump for the same reason that black people dislike Donald Trump. White people dislike Donald Trump for this reason and this reason alone. White people dislike Donald Trump because Donald Trump is not presidential. What does that mean? When you think of presidential, you think of a white man in a suit. You think of a white man in a suit who speaks grammatically correct English, who speaks with a smile on his face. You think of a man who is seemingly, I'm emphasizing the word seemingly, listen to the pitch of my voice change, seemingly a good human being. Presidents are liars and devils, all of them. The only president who wasn't a liar, no, pardon me, the only president who was not a devil was Barack Obama. By nature, Barack Obama is a righteous human being, and he was coming in trying to correct the damage that past presidents had done before him, but he ended up being sucked into the system and becoming a part of the problem instead of a solution. But he should have known that being a black man, you cannot change white people. Black people cannot change white people. Black sensibilities and black morality and black compassion does not change or make a lick of difference to white people. White people are not motivated by emotion. The government is not motivated by emotion. So it makes you, so you have to think, why does the government advertise homosexuality? Why does the government advertise feminism? Why does the government advertise these things? It's because the government truly loves homosexuals and feminists? No. The government just knows that homosexuality and feminism are great agents of chaos. Homosexuality and feminism bring about a chaotic nature that can cause dysfunction in communities, and it can, which will make them the head of that community forever, perpetually, because that's what devils do. Devils cause division and cause chaos so that they can be the only person to rectify the chaos. I'll give you a perfect example, one that I was a part of. I used to work for a company where we would go around knocking on doors. We would tell people that they were at risk of such and such, and we were there to help them. We gave them a problem. This was truly deceptive of me, and I'm ashamed to have been a part of that. But we gave these people a problem that they previously had no knowledge of and possibly didn't have at all. And then we turned around and gave them a solution as well. That's how white people operate all day long. And just for clarification, it was a white man who was the brains of the entire operation I was working under. Just for a complete clarification. The white man gives you a problem. He says, this is the problem. And then he also gives you the solution. So the government has been an organization that white people worship. The government is the white man and woman's God. Understand this. White people do not have a God that they subscribe to. Ask them, do you believe in God? Yeah, I believe in Jesus. Well, what color was Jesus? Jesus is white. See, Jesus is just white people worshiping themselves. White people's God is America. Yeah. And a part of their God's ability, one of the major things that white people love about their God is that their God can do evil while looking good. That's what white people love about their God. Their God can continue to do evil to other people while their God subsequently shows itself as being a good God to those people. So it's very difficult for some people to see America as an evil country because America is just so damn good at being evil and deceptive. America is very good at being evil. America is very good at being evil and hiding its evil. So white people love that aspect of America. White people love that their government has plausible deniability. That for every person like me that says America is wrong, another person can say, no, but America did some good over here. We fed this person. White people love that. White people that you meet on a day-to-day basis are people who are supposed to endorse their government without question, with a smile on their face and a twinkle in their eye. That's what they do. They endorse their government, and they always try to offset any negative criticism about their government because the government is their God. You see, the God of righteousness didn't give America this country. The God of righteousness allowed America to get this country, but the God of righteousness did not give white people this country. So white people don't worship the God of righteousness. They don't worship you. You worship who gives you rewards. That's like a dog. You feed your dog loves you. Somebody else starts to feed your dog might start loving them. So you love who gives to you. Black people were given life by the Almighty God, Allah. White people were given life. Well, that's a deep history, the origin of white people, maybe for another podcast. But as far as this country is concerned, this country was given to white people by their own evil. So they don't look up to no God that the black person worships. They can care less about the God that you and I worship. They look up to their own ingenuity. They look up to themselves. So the government gives white people. The government gave white people, because the government is their God. The government gave white people their existence. The government gave white people golf courses and gave white people McDonald's and gave white people a life of luxury. So they're not going to betray their God. And that's why white people hate Donald Trump. Because Donald Trump was supposed to be presidential. He was supposed to be a white man who was able to lie well. When you're white, you're supposed to be able to lie without being detected. You're supposed to be able to lie proficiently. When you're white, that's what you're supposed to do. You're trained to do that as a white person. This is a fact. Watch a Disney Channel show sometime. Watch a Disney Channel show and watch how in the show they are basically training children how to lie to their parents. And most of the children are white. And they try to show, they're basically trying to train children to be liars, to be proficient liars. Go and observe it. Don't watch it from an entertainment perspective. Watch it from an analytical perspective and you'll see exactly what I'm saying. White people are trained to be liars. I'll give you another example. When white children are small, their parents tell them that there's such thing as a tooth fairy. Why do their parents do that? Their parents may not even know why they do it, but truthfully, underneath everything, their parents really do it to keep up a system of lies. Because they know they're lying to their children. But what they're trying to do is they're trying to introduce into their children's mind something which is called a white lie. And white lies are the best lies of all of them. See, black lies and black lives don't matter. But white lies and white lives do matter. And see, that's in that there's a lie. You see? And the way you get a child to understand this is by treating them very small. There's a tooth fairy. There's a Santa Claus. And then you have to tell them there's not a tooth fairy as Santa Claus. And then the child has to understand that, okay, this is the world that I live in. I live in a world of lies. What you gonna do, white person? Well, I guess I will have to become a part of that world. I'll have to become a liar myself if I want to get ahead. Facts. Facts. So Donald Trump is a liar. But so is every other president. Abraham Lincoln was a liar. George Washington owned slaves. He was a devil. Thomas Jefferson, devil. Who else? Richard Nixon, devil. Jimmy Carter, devil. Oh, Ronald Reagan, devil. George W. Bush, the first one, devil. George W. Bush, the son, devil. Who else? Come on. Come on. Who else? Theodore Roosevelt, devil. Come on. Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Hey, even being in a wheelchair with polio, he too was a devil. He did a lot of good for white people, trying to create, you know, different programs to help the depression, the New Deal, and such. But to black people, he was just another devil. So I'm confused by your hatred of Donald Trump. Your hatred of Donald Trump is ridiculous. It's trendy. It's not that you should not dislike Donald Trump, because I dislike Donald Trump, but I dislike most white people. I dislike this system of government that is controlled by white supremacy. I dislike it as a whole. I don't make any distinctions between who I'm going to dislike one day and who I'm going to dislike another day. I dislike the whole thing. That's me. You, most of you, dislike just parts of it. I dislike Donald Trump, but I love Hillary Clinton. Listen, nigga, you can't dislike Donald Trump and love Hillary Clinton. That's how you show your ignorance as a black person. Yeah, because Hillary Clinton is a racist white devil. You see in the news a lot of white women doing things against black people. Yeah, I saw a clip of a white woman who tried to stop a black man from entering his own apartment building. We saw the white woman go into an apartment and kill a black man. We see a lot of white women doing these things. You want to know why? Because even during slavery, it is said that the white man was brutal and the white man was vicious and he was a devil, but his white wife was sometimes even worse and more vicious and more devilish. See, women by nature when you lie to a woman, whatever you do to a woman, she typically can do it better to you back. So if you're a liar, your woman will become a liar too. But she'll become so much of a liar, it'll be imperceptible. Meaning, it'll be hard to tell whether she's telling the truth or telling a lie. That's Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton is a devil who got Muammar Gaddafi, the leader of Libya, killed. That's Hillary Clinton. She's a devil. She's the same devil who in the 90s made the statement that black men are super predators. Think about that. Think about that. Think about that statement. Hillary Clinton called young black men in the cities super predators. Let that breathe. What are the implications of it? Let it breathe. Let's think. If I'm a white woman in the head of office, come on, we thinking now. And from my position, I have influence and power. Who do you have influence over? I have influence over the minds of other people who are underneath of me. Who's underneath of you? The entire nation of the United States of America is underneath me. I'm making a statement as a head of office that black men are super predators. What does that do to the white people that are listening to her? Millions of white people. What does that do to them? That inspires them in their mind. That they're saying that this came from God. Because again, remember, the government is the white man's God. Not the God of righteousness. Not the God of creation. That's not the God of white people. The government is white America's God. So when the government makes a decree or a statement, when any government official says anything, white people are very curious and they act on that. They act on the decree. You may not act on it. You say, I don't fuck with politics. Yeah. That's our position with politics. We are disenchanted and turned off from politics because of how complicated and it's only complicated because it's very evil. See, nothing that is true, when things are true, it's very simple. 1 + 1 = 2. Simple. Politics is very tricky. And the tricknology of politics turns black people off because, man, like, goddamn, I can't make heads or tails of who's lying and who's telling the truth. I'm just not going to deal with it at all. But white people do. You go into an average middle American white man's home, guess what he's watching on his TV? CNN. You should be watching it too, but you are not going to be watching it for the same reasons that he's watching it. He's watching it to get divine revelation from his God, which is America, the government of the United States. You should be watching it to get information on the next plot that the devil is concocting to hurt you and your family. That's why you should watch the news, because America's God is actually the black man's devil. Okay, let that breathe. So White people don't hate Donald Trump for the reasons you hate Donald Trump. White people hate Donald Trump because Donald Trump is not good at being a white liar. He's not good at being a white devil, because you're supposed to be really tricky when you're a white devil. That's the whole point. It was a writer, one of my favorite authors, V.S. Naipaul, in his book, A Bend in the River. He said that white people wanted their slaves and they wanted their statues. In the context of the book, what he was saying was that not only do white people want to do evil, they also want to be seen as good after the evil. So white people enslaved black people, but then white people also freed black people, and they were hoping that in freeing black people, so-called freedom, because slavery was not ended, slavery just took on a modern expression. That's how white people operate. White people believe in modernism. They believe in evolution of a thing. See, once before, there was a time where when you wanted to turn the channel on the TV, you would have to go up and walk to the TV and turn the channel. There was a time where when you wanted to beat a black man down, you would have to get a rope or get a whip and you'd have to beat him. But see, the white man believes in science and he believes in evolution of scientific thought. So he no longer has to go up to the TV and turn it. And he no longer has to take a whip and beat a black man. Beating black men is very hard because black men are very strong, strong-willed men. So beating them is tough. You got to think from the perspective of the slave master sometimes. You can't just think about yourself all the time, black man and black woman. Think about how tough it is to beat a black man. How your arm gets sore after a while. I don't want to keep doing this for the rest of my life. So just as the TV was revolutionized to have a remote control has also been revolutionized in slavery. So the Negro and nigger, they think that I'm not being controlled by white people. I'm free to do whatever I want. No, see, beloved, it's called remote control. It's called being able to control you from a long distance. See, remote controls use radio frequencies, RF, to make their changes. And radio frequencies are not seen or not detected by the human eye, but they are no less real. And that is the same control. Racism, as stated by Dr. Umar Johnson, is like oxygen. And to white people, they breathe it in just fine. You can't see oxygen by the naked eye. We all breathe it in. But white people, they breathe it in and they get stronger. You breathe it in and you get weaker, because what makes them strong makes you weak, and what makes us strong makes them weak. But what makes us strong truthfully could make them strong as well, but they would have to denounce their father, which is the devil. To get the white man to be strong, he would have to actually come out and say, I do not approve of anything that my fathers have done in the past. And I submit myself to the God of the black man and black woman. That's the only way a white person could ever be my friend. You all have a lot of white friends. But you have white friends without any qualifications. You didn't make them fill out a resume. You should have. Because if you had put them to the test, you would have seen that they wouldn't have passed. None of them would pass. No white person has any true value in their mind when it comes to black people. That's why when most white people meet you, they immediately start trying to talk to you about rap. Fuck, is rap the defining characteristic of black people? No, but in their mind it is. Why? Because they don't give a damn about you. I was once having a conversation with one of my brothers and a white person overheard me. And I said, I was talking to my brother. I forget what I was saying. I remember what the white devil said, but I forget what I was saying. I was basically saying something along the lines of, brother, you know, as black people, we need such and such. I forget what I was saying. And the white devil came over and he said to me, all black people need is rap music, with a laugh. And he laughed and smiled. And the black person that I was talking to laughed too, because he was the white man's nigga. That was his junior slave master. So I didn't laugh, because I knew what the white man was doing was mocking us. But most of us don't see when white people mock us. So I don't get your hate, your reasoning for disliking Kanye West is not logical. You should dislike yourself, and you should try to change yourself. But disliking Kanye West, not logical. Mm-mm. Not humane. Not loving of you to dislike Kanye West, because he is in a place of confusion. Kanye West is surrounded by white people, and he's impressionable. And he's around the type of white people that, again, like I said before, are very predacious. They're very predacious white people, meaning they attack the sensitive black man. They attack the sensitive black man, and they begin to work on him and make him think like they do. They invite him over for dinner. They begin to talk very, you know how white people talk. They talk about everything casually. Life is so casual and nothing really means anything. You know, everything's funny. They try to philosophize things, but at the end of the day, their philosophies don't truly make an impact on real life. They're called the aristocrats. This is what aristocrats do. And aristocrats basically are people who are in a lot of power, or positions of power, and they basically sit around and they just discuss, you know, social issues, but they discuss it with such an air of casualness that it doesn't even matter. It's just conversation to pass the time while we're eating our caviar. And Kanye West hangs around these type of people. So they prey on his intelligence by feeding him a lot of very weak European ideas of his own people. So you have to forgive Kanye West. You don't know what it's like to be a man under that kind of pressure. You don't know. You have to forgive him. If you made it this far to the end of the end of the podcast, I'm asking you to forgive Kanye West and to be humble when you see him making mistakes, because he is trying to be a better human being. He is trying. His try is not all that effective, but you are not God to judge and to try to make a determination of how his life is going to be. So you should be humble, and I should be humble, and we should just observe Kanye West. We shouldn't be so quick to make comments against him. You know? Because our comments and all of our collective dislike of Kanye West could inspire somebody to try to take his life. It could. It's very real. A collective idea with so much dislike and hatred fueling it can definitely spark the notion in somebody's mind to kill Kanye West. I've actually seen comments in YouTube channels where people have talked about killing Kanye West or have spoken about his death. That should be against the law. But it's not. Kanye West is our brother. I had a dream I could buy my way to heaven. When I woke, I spent that on a necklace. I told God I'd be back in a second. Man, it's so hard not to act reckless. It's so hard not to act reckless when you have free will. Because as human beings, that's what Allah granted us. That's what the difference between us and animals. We have free will. And when you combine free will with excess and money and fame, it becomes that much harder not to act reckless. Peace. Greetings, beloved people. My name is Aleem, and this is Talking Black. And today I want to introduce a new subject that is new to the podcast. It's not something that I've done before, but it's also something that I'm planning on doing again in the future. Well, anytime soon, at least. Not until, you know, Floyd Mayweather fights Manny Pacquiao. But I want to talk about sports. Sports. And I want to talk about one sport in particular that I believe is the superior sport of all sports. And that sport, in my opinion, is soccer. Soccer is what they call a gentleman's game. It's a sport that requires a lot of energy, a lot of mental acuity, a lot of patience. Because one thing that people don't like about soccer is that they lose their patience with the lack of goals made. And in that is a great life lesson, because true goals are only obtained after much hardship. And soccer demonstrates that very, very well, because you're not running down the field successfully and getting to the goal without having somebody kicking you back and possibly only scoring two goals in that game. Now, those two goals could mean that you won the game, even though the game was going on for 90 minutes. But you scored two goals, and then those two goals were enough to get you into victory. So, you know, you look at other sports, professional sports, basketball, football. You know, you get basketball, you can have, like, you know, upwards of 100 points. That means that there's an intention factor there. There's always a goal being made. There are goals, the rate, the duration of time, and the goals that are being made in that duration of time they're about the same. Means like for every couple of minutes, a goal is being made, something like that. Or I think that would be an accurate statement. But it's not the case in soccer. And you have to have patience to watch this game. And it's exhilarating. It's not the goals. So the goals are like a release. The goals are orgasmic. And I'm not saying it in a sexual way. I'm not trying to be vulgar on this platform, because I want children to understand this platform as well. But when you think about what an orgasm is, which is a ultimate release after a lot of work is being done, you understand that's the translation of how a goal feels in the game of soccer, because nobody is scoring a goal very easily.
you're working. You're trying to get down the field. Somebody steal the ball. You're trying to get the ball back. They steal the ball from them. It's a drama being played out. It's almost like a damn soap opera being played out in front of you. Between characters, like dialogue, people going back and forth. And then finally, after all this tension is being built up and built up and built up, finally somebody makes it past somebody and takes their foot and uses their foot as a damn club in golf, damn near. As a damn golf club, and kicks a ball in accurately into a goal being defended by somebody whose whole job is to defend the goal. He manages to get this ball in the goal with precision. Orgasm. Boom. And no other game will get you there. In my opinion, and these, you know, just again my opinions, and it's the reason why I love soccer. Soccer, you know, as a Muslim, I have certain sensibilities. Peace being the main principle of everything I do. At least this is what I'm trying to be, because I'm not entirely a Muslim. I am a person who is striving to be more Islamic and to practice the principles of Islam more and more. But the one thing that I can identify with, and with most people, well, at least most black people, will identify with in Islam, is that as we want peace, as we search in our day-to-day lives for a sense of peace and gratification, Islam is a religion that caters to that peace and promotes that innate desire to have peace. Islam is a religion that comes to quell that thirst, or to quench that thirst for peace. Soccer is a game that goes along with that understanding, and I believe that is the reason why the game is played in almost every country in the world, and predominantly played best by, well, it can be definitely debated who plays the game best and what country plays the game best. The World Cup is not like the NBA Finals. It's not completely black, the World Cup. I hope that one day it will. I want to see a black team win the World Cup so damn bad, man. Soccer is that last game that black people are not completely invading it. But do I want to see black people invade it? A part of me wants to say yes, but then another part of me, the greater part of me, knows that it's good to have true diversity. Not makeshift diversity. See, when a white person says they want diversity, what they truly want is assimilated versions of people of ethnic culture who are just internally other versions of white people. That's the diversity of white people. When white people don't want diversity, they don't want that. They don't want the true definition of what diversity means. They want ethnic people who are not ethnic minded to be around them. That's what they mean by diversity. They want ethnic people who have abandoned their ethnicity and abandoned their traditions and cultures in favor of the democratic American European culture. That's not diversity. So soccer is showing diversity because you have your European teams. You have your Well, you have European teams, African teams, you have your South American, American teams, and these are all the countries. These countries are characterized by their groupings of a particular shade of people, which, you know, is great. I would like to have, you know, all black teams, but I mean, you know, we can't ask for that in this kind of world. So, you know, you get, you know, a few black people in this team, but characteristically, the French team is white. Cameroon is all black, and you know the South American teams, they're all, you know, Native American, you know, Indian, Aboriginal people who are playing the game. And it's beautiful to watch that kind of collaboration between races, because it's not violent. And that brings me to another thing about the science that I love, that science. Well, yeah, I love that about science, but soccer. Soccer is nonviolent war, in that it's definitely one against the other, and that one that is going against the other, he's not obtaining a victory just for their team. They are obtaining victory not just for their city. See, with soccer, it's bigger than city, at least outside of America. In America, it's regulated to cities. You know, you got the DC United, you got the Chicago Fire. But in the world of soccer, as internationally speaking, it's country against country. So it's essentially a war between countries that is being played out nonviolently. That appeals to my Muslim peaceful sensibilities, but it also appeals to my sensibilities as a man for power and to, you know, be victorious. It's a game like no other damn game there is, without a shadow of a doubt. When you take into consideration that the players are playing with a handicap, it gives you even a greater sense of respect for the game. Because there's not many sports where you are asked as a player to forego a part of your body to play the game. They're not saying to play football, to play, you gotta not wear a helmet, or you got to play basketball, you gotta only shoot with one hand every time you make a shot. There's no other type of requirements, physical requirements, placed on other sports like they are placed in soccer. With soccer, these players are playing with handicaps. Not true handicaps, because their professionalism and their mastery of the game has allowed them to make use of their entire body, all except for their hands. And I mean, I'm sure a real soccer player would say, to hell with hands. They probably go home and eat with their feet, even though they have hands. I don't know. But they utilize every part of the. It's a game of imagination. It invokes so much imagination when you see somebody jump in the air and hit a ball with their head, or hit the ball with their chest, or hit the ball with some unseen part of their body. You're running down a field for 90 minutes, and it could go into overtime. But you're running with the thing. You're using up energy, and you're using up stamina with the very thing that you need to score with. So your legs are working double time for the scorers. Your legs are working double time. You're using your legs you're using your legs for your mobility, but you're also using your legs to execute your shot. Ain't no other sport asking you to do that. In basketball, you're using your legs to transport your body down the goal, true enough, down to the goal, but then you're using your arms to make the shot. So it's a so it's not so much emphasis on one part of your body more than the other. You're not using one part of your body more than you're using the other part of your body. Your energy isn't being dispensed, and your energy is not being, you're not putting stress on one part of your body. Your body is sharing stress between your arms and your hands in these other sports. In soccer, the stress is being applied below the waist. You're not only kicking with your damn feet, you're running up and down the field, you're dodging, you're sliding, you're tackling with your legs. Ain't no tackling with my body. That is not football. You're making tackles with your legs. Come on, man. And your knees are some of the most sensitive parts of you. You ever banged your knee? You know if you bang your knee how sensitive knees are. You mean to tell me it's a chance I could go out and bang my knee every time I play soccer? I'm not playing soccer. Hate banging my god darn knees. These things, man, attract all kinds of pain. Going out here and bumping knees against nobody. But that's exactly what happens. I mean, hey, this isn't going to be a long podcast. It was really just for fun because I was in the spirit of talking about soccer. And I probably want to get out there and play, but it's just too cold in PA to play. So that's the podcast for today. You know, just soccer. Come on, man. Put soccer on the brain for today as a possibility and, you know, in your entertainment, because God is fun. God is such a fun sport. But that is the podcast for today. I am Aleem, and this has been Talking Black. Peace.
Greetings and welcome to another episode of Talking Black with your host, Aleem. And I finally decided on my next subject. And it just came to me out the blue. I wasn't even expecting to make a podcast until just now. And I was listening to Nice by Jay-Z and Beyonce. And I'm listening to Jay's intro verse. His lyrics, I'm listening to his delivery, and what I'm noticing about his delivery and what I'm noticing about Jay-Z from the vantage point of seeing his entire career, from listening to all of his albums, knowing damn near all the lyrics to every song he's ever made, he understands music so well that it doesn't matter. Rap is a language that's fluent to him. Or it's not that rap is the language. Maybe it's just that music is such a fluent language to Jay-Z that the brother has been able to stay entrenched in it. I mean, embedded in rap. There's really been no point in time that he has not been a voice in rap. He has always maintained a consistent presence in rap. And I believe that it's because he has such great insight as to what rap is and its possibilities that he can just move right along with whatever's going on without feeling like he's selling out. Jay-Z doesn't sound like a sellout. It doesn't sound like he is forsaking his style in favor of a new style. It's still very much Jay-Z. It's just this entity that Sean Carter has created, Jay-Z, is a transcendent being. This entity is a being with really no limits, and that's the reason why he is called the God of rap. And justifiably so, because as God rules over things and is very much a critical part of everything, so is Jay-Z a critical part of rap music. He is almost at the epicenter of rap. He is almost like the nucleus of rap, and we know that in the nucleus is where an atom holds its power. I'm listening to him on the hook. You know, I can do anything. Yeah, hell nah. And you hear Jay-Z coming in with this verse, and I'm nice. And you know, and this is really a young man's game, and that type of energy, that type of energy, that's really a young man thing that these young rappers have, you know, come up with, because their music is not so much about lyrics. Their music is more so about feeling and emotion and conveying the aggression of being black in America. So their music is more about feel. So to hear Jay-Z put that kind of feeling in his music, you know, that I'm like, wow. This brother is phenomenal. That's all I wanted to say. Just wanted to comment on Jay-Z. I suppose I should talk about something else, but I don't know what else to talk about. But I really don't like talking about rap, because black people have made hip-hop culture synonymous with black culture, and that's a huge problem. It is actually, it gives us no respect. Hip-hop is not a medium that will induce a person's respect beyond a certain point. Even if a person sees you as this great rapper, they'll only keep you in that box, and if you ever try to step outside of that box, you'll lose their respect. For instance, Kanye West. I remember he was on the Breakfast Club, and the brother was talking about becoming more interested in fashion and trying to get other ideas off the ground, and Charlamagne Tha God said, hey, look, we like you for the music that you make, not for nothing else. And not only was that a very telling sign of Charlamagne Tha God's perspective, and he evolves with time, I believe. He slips back and forth between growing and not growing, but that was his attitude, was not really originated from himself. He was speaking from the mindset that a lot of people have about that sort of thing. You know, you're a great rapper. Oh, I love you so much. But, you know, rap is not the end all be all to black life. And that's what a lot of black people don't understand. And the reason why they don't understand it is because the other major aspect of being black, which is having intelligence and having power in business and in things like that, that is not as advocated, that is not as heavily advocated to us as the rap is. So I don't like talking about rap so much. But Jay-Z make you want to talk about rap, because the brother is always reinventing himself. Remember, my first album was the Black Album, and I was so mesmerized by the lyrics in the album, I would write the lyrics in my agenda for school. And I remember my mother found my agenda one day, and she read the lyrics that I wrote. And in the agenda I had wrote, "Now the teachers couldn't reach me, and my mama couldn't beat me hard enough to match the pain of my pop not seeing me." And at that time in my life, I hadn't seen my father in 6 years. So I related to Jay-Z in a really crazy way. He's born December 4th, I'm December the 14th. So I always had this, he's the last of his mother's children, I'm the last of my mother's children. So when I was growing up, I always had this connection with Jay-Z through his music, and really not just through his music, because if he wasn't who he is, we still have those similarities and those, you know, that common ground. So I would connect with them anyway, I believe, but it's just, that's how I got introduced to Jay-Z. And then after I got the Black Album, my father bought me the Reasonable Doubt album, and he bought me the one with no cussings in it. And I played that joint out. My mother broke the Black Album. When she read the agenda and saw the lyrics in it, she asked for me to bring the CD down, and I was crying bringing it down the stairs to her where she was at. And as soon as she got it in her hand, she snapped the CD in half. I was mad as hell. But that wouldn't be the last Jay-Z album I bought. Anytime I ever got any money over $13, I would always go to Best Buy and buy his albums. And at that time, I was stealing. I was stealing out of the stores at that time in my life as a young child. But I couldn't bring myself to steal a Jay-Z album because he was so great in my eyes. I wanted to support him, even though he's already fucking rich. But I still wanted to support brother, so I would buy all his albums, even the ones I figured out I didn't like, The Life and Times of Sean Carter, Volume 2 was alright. Volume 1 is the one I didn't like quite so much. Yeah, I mean, all of his albums, you can't go an album without liking at least a good 5 to 6 songs on a complete album from Jay-Z. Other albums, you can listen to the entire thing, such as the Black Album, such as Reasonable Doubt, such as the Blueprint, such as, especially the Blueprint. That was like a whole album of singles for Jay-Z. The Blueprint 2, not so much. That was a very experimental album for Jay-Z, where he was, he had that song with Guns N' Roses with Lenny Kravitz that was really good, but there was a lot of experimental aspects to that album, because that album was made in a very indifferent time in rap music, you know. And I don't think Jay-Z is not an innovator of rap. Jay-Z is not that brother. He's the god of rap, but he's not the brother who introduces, I'm not gonna say he doesn't introduce style, because he definitely introduces style. What I believe more so than anything is he introduces intelligence in rap, not so much style. I wouldn't say he introduces style, because if you try to start rapping like Jay-Z, it will be very noticeable, because he has a very distinct style of rapping. It's very nonchalant. He doesn't, even when he's being aggressive on a song, he never sounds emotional. He always sounds very, you know, level-headed in all of his music. So you trying to copy his style will definitely come off, but it's the intelligence that he brings. It's the ability to write whole raps without actually having a pen or a pad. It's the intelligence of his lyrics. It's the double entendres, or as he said in one song, Drake on the first Drake album, he said triple entendres. Sometimes you can listen to a Jay-Z song and things have multiple meanings. It's a very layered thing that's going on. I'm waiting for my taxi, and I have been waiting since 4 o'clock. It is now 6 o'clock, and I'm wondering where this taxi is. But that Jay-Z, I got to see him in concert for my birthday in 2017. And he was doing his tour for 444. And I remember we came and we got in our seats. We were in Philly, out Philly, at the Wells Fargo. And we were going to our seats and getting seated. And one of the security guards came up to us and he was like, "So, you know why this album is called 444? And we was like, "Nah." He was like, "It's because he was born on the 4th. He got married on the 4th of some day. And it was all these correlations that in Jay-Z's life, more than those two that I just gave. He has all these correlations in his life to the number 4, so he named the album 444. And we waited, man. We was waiting for it, what seemed like forever, just in the seats, just watching the stadium fill up. We had good seats too. Shout out to my sister Ali Michelle. She didn't go cheap on me that year. She really went out her way and did a wonderful thing for me. We waiting and waiting. And Vic Mensa was Jay-Z's opening act. And me and my sister like, "Who is Vic Mensa?" And I do not care to see him. But Vic Mensa came out. They did Vic Mensa. They set up Vic Mensa very well. I mean, as far as the sonics go, you know, the acoustics and, you know, just the light show that they had going on with his performance, and his songs were really awesome. I had tried to record one, but Instagram does this thing where it only sparingly records sound. So it's sound selective. But I really enjoyed Vic Mensa. But after Vic Mensa got off stage, it was more waiting. It was more waiting. And at some point, the Jumbotrons started playing this video. And it was a video like Jay-Z's life. And in the video, it was all these different images that we seen of Jay-Z, these iconic photos of Jay-Z, but he's not in the picture. It was like a scene where he's, you know, doing donuts in the car with Kanye West for the Otis video, but he's not in the car. Or it's like a video of his daughter Blue being tossed up in the air, but there's nobody tossing her. It's invisible. But you know it's him. He's tossing her, but it's like he's not there. And so he's trying to build this up into the kill Jay-Z. And he comes out on stage with fire, like, "Fuck Jay-Z." Then I'm like, been waiting my whole life to see this brother. I'm like going crazy. I'm like, yo! I'm going crazy. And it was somewhere during the middle of the set, after all these bad songs, like, we was partying. Like, the joint just felt like a party, because you getting back all these songs that you learned over the years, like, over the course of, like, your whole life, you've been knowing these songs, and then you get to rap all these things that you know with the guy who taught you all these lyrics, and it's like, damn, this is a crazy experience. And it was just some point in the middle of his set where I just stopped rapping the song, and it was one of my favorite songs. I just like had to just like look at him like, this brother is just a man. But despite being a man, just a man, you know, he's a exceptionally great man. So, yeah, man, I had a good time seeing Jay. Look at Ernest. Look at this man. Where is this cat? E! What's up, man? What's going on with you? I'm waiting for my taxi, yo. They're supposed to come get me at 4 o'clock.
At 4 o'clock?
Yeah, that's what I'm really am bugging.
Why didn't you call a Lyft and shit?
I don't have that app.
It's a damn show, bro.
It is a show.
Fucking around these cabs out here, you know, we just gonna leave your ass up.
And he told me it was going to be here in 20 minutes when I got off at 4. Yeah, I called back. They kept saying, well, they got other trips in front of you, so we'll be out there in another 20, 30 minutes. Just give us that. And I'm just like, okay. Because I got to be somewhere. I didn't want to take the bus. I seen like 5 buses pass by. But I'm trying to get somewhere that the bus not going to be able to take me. So I'm like, all right, I'll wait for it. Let me see your jacket.
I guess you feeling the effects how they be feeling now.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
Well, that you got a story tomorrow. Yeah, like, yeah, you know, I feel the pain.
Right.
Now you got a story.
That's
nah,
a real
see
talk.
Somebody riding through the parking lot. On Sunday.
I didn't even respond to your message. I saw you typing back, but I didn't see what you said.
Nah, I just laughed at you. Because I seen it, I'm like, yo, what's good? The motherfucker, nah, I said, what's good? I'm like, damn, you on a bike? You done came up, huh? And shit. And the motherfucker just kept rolling and shit. Like, damn, word is like that and shit.
You thought that was me.
For real.
It looked
shit,
like me?
Yeah, and shit, but he had a hood on and all that shit. So I'm like, all right, I guess he just had some headphones in or something. I was coming out the store.
Nah, you know I wouldn't do you like that, yo. That's
yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, that's kind of wild.
Did you just get off?
Yeah,
God damn, boy. You get off mad late, yo.
I know, I'm about to switch it up.
I really should, man.
But now,
you should. You could have been done 100 things by now.
Hmm?
Oh, yeah, that's a fact.
Now, summertime, yeah, but now, I ain't going nowhere anyway.
True. What are you heading to now, yo?
I'm about to go over to the smoke shop, grab some wax and fucking iced tea and shit.
Word. Nah, let me call these people.